And welcome back in hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porter with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Going to have Teresa Walker from the Associated Press join us at 8 o'clock. Matt Duchesne, Predator Center, will join us at 9 o'clock. And Adam Vinion from The Athletic at 9:30. So still a lot to get to today here on the show. Glad you're joining us here on this Wednesday morning. And we're talking some Titans. And we talked about it a little bit yesterday, the priority of Corey Davis, where he fits in to the plans in the offseason for the Tennessee Titans. And, Joe, it's interesting to look at this receiving room right now because, obviously, you feel great about A.J. Brown moving forward. You've got a decision to make on Corey Davis. He's got a decision to make on whether or not he wants to keep playing here. And I think both you and I feel like it's pretty likely Adam Humphries not going to be here next year based on his injury history, based on the salary that he would be making next year. So all of a sudden, you look around, maybe no Corey Davis, maybe no Adam Humphries. You've got A.J. Brown. That receiving room looks pretty dry at that moment. Lots to be desired left in that room. So regardless of whether or not Corey Davis is signed, my opinion is the Titans are going to have to address, you know, receiver in the draft. But let's just say for the sake of this argument, Corey Davis isn't signed, what kind of a priority does receiver become at that point? Because obviously you look around on the other side of the ball and there are some things to fix on that side that you're going to have to address in the draft as well. So if Corey Davis is gone and you don't have Adam Humphries coming back, is receiver already the number one priority in the draft just based on how few weapons you have on that side of the ball, or are you still going defense at that point?
That's a good question. You know, I think that it depends on who you're talking about. You know, I think you could go either way. I still think you've got to. And also that question is answered in part by, you know, what are you doing in free agency there? I mean, I think at both spots, I think it's possible the Titans address both spots, you know, in both ways, with free agent signings and high draft picks. You look around at, you know, who could be available on the market. You know, it's a lot of, there's some old guys out there, yeah, who, you know, AJ Greens and T.Y. Hilton's and Larry Fitzgeralds of the world are UFAs. I mean, you know, Sammy Watkins is a guy who you figure, I mean, I assume Kansas City doesn't have its own salary cap, even though it seems like they do, you know, so that would be, he would be someone who, you know, Marvin Jones from Detroit is a nice player. Allen Robinson from the Bears. You know, are you willing to? But you know, I'm listing guys who are going to command big numbers.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you're willing to pay guys like that, then I mean, I would think the Titans would prefer to try to bring Corey Davis back. You know, in the draft, our guy Dane Brugler did a 2-round mock yesterday. He had Zaven Collins, Tulsa linebacker, going to the Titans at 22, but he had Rondale Moore as their 2nd-round pick. Rondale Moore is potentially kind of a Tyreek Hill kind of player.
Yeah.
But, you know, that doesn't mean he'll be that. He's a little bit more of a run after the catch guy, but he's a little guy who is super fast and quick. I mean, I think someone like that in this offense, if you could just add him to this year's offense, what a dynamic piece that would be. Someone like him, you know, a speedster who can be a real threat on the receiver screens and all that stuff, maybe as a return guy too. But you think about if you lost Corey Davis, that's not your replacement on the outside. You know, I mean, that you've got, and again, I mean, big physical receivers matter in this offense because yes, they need to block. I mean, anybody coming in here as a receiver has got to know you're going to be asked to block a lot. So hope you're cool with that. A guy like Allen Robinson probably be pretty good at that, you know, probably suit him well, but I mean, how much is that guy going to command on the market?
And to your point, Joe, I mean, that's obviously with Derrick Henry and how reliant this offense is on him and his production on the ground. You know, that's part of what made Corey Davis so valuable for this team. We had Corey Curtis on from News 2 earlier this week to discuss Corey Davis and what his future could look like. and maybe how he's the best fit at the wide receiver for the Titans on the open market. Here's what Corey Curtis had to say.
I always said that when they declined the option, they said, hey, we're going to decline this option, but we want you to be a part of our football team. And I feel like if they would have offered him like 4 years and $32 to $36 million at that point, they probably could have signed him. But now he's going to cost more than that. So, you know, and somebody will probably be willing to pay more. It's just a matter of what Corey thinks is most important to fit for him. And I think he does fit in, you know, with some other teams. I think some other teams he could be a really good fit for, some teams that like to run the football especially. You'll just have to wait and see on how that goes. But you saw what that Titans pass attack looked like without him in it, or without him productive in it. You know, when they just could focus on A.J. Brown, things got a lot tougher. Now, I don't expect Adam Humphries to be a part of this team next year, not at his price tag. I think his number's up over $10 million next year. If you don't have Adam, you're not invested in anyone at that position. And that's why I think they should be able to afford Corey, because they've got A.J. for two more years on his rookie deal.
And that was Corey Curtis earlier this week, and he brings up the point of Corey Davis being a fit in this Titans offense with the way they like to play. And yeah, I mean, he's probably going to be expensive this year. Like, you know, Corey Davis on the open market, maybe he does fetch $11 or $12 million per year. But if you're the Titans, how do you balance the need of trying not to overpay for Corey Davis, but also recognizing what your receiving room may look like without him? I mean, that's a tough spot for John Robinson in this. And also, you know, we feel like Corey Davis wants to be here, and he's a good teammate, and everything that we've seen points to that. But how does he feel about hitting the open market? Is he just going to be a guy that goes after the most amount of money that he can get and signs somewhere else? I mean, that's an interesting standpoint, too, of how does Corey Davis approach this in a year where, you know, free agency with the salary cap remaining the same, maybe even going down. It's not the ideal time to be a free agent. It's interesting to me to see how Corey Davis is going to approach this as well.
Yeah, because I think you could make the case to him, like, Corey, hey, you could go other places and do well, but this team really fits you, you know? I mean, I think you could make that case to him, and I can see him thinking that way too. Like, this is a really good spot for me, you know, opposite A.J. Brown in this offense. And I think that there's a good – like, I think there's a good – feeling between Corey and the locker room. I think he's one of the real valued guys in that locker room. I think a good situation with Corey in the front office. I mean, certainly as good as you could hope after an option is turned down. A lot of times that sours things. But I don't think Corey Davis, you know, he's got his feet on the ground. He understands that he wasn't going to get number five pick option money. I mean, that's just not realistic. So I think that if they prioritize him, I think they have a good chance to get him back. But then you still have to do something else. Like you said, I mean, I wouldn't expect to see Adam Humphries. That was a real valuable role in the slot. Who's out there as a slot receiver? The other guys who are out there in general, I mean, a guy like Will Fuller is interesting.
Yeah.
You know, Will Fuller is, you know, with him, it's just, how do you trust him to be healthy? I think if you could sign up for a year of Will Fuller playing every game or playing 14 games, you know, a lot of teams probably would. The guy is he's a burner, and we know he made a difference whenever he was in that lineup for the Texans, but, man, he was not in it a lot. Another Chief, DeMarcus Robinson, guy who just doesn't, you know, do much, but my gosh, I mean, in that offense, like, there's one football. I could see DeMarcus Robinson somewhere else, you know, being a pretty good player. I mean, like a guy like T.Y. Hilton, what's the market for him? If he leaves Indy, he made $13 million this year. If you're the Titans, does it sound appealing to have a guy who usually kills you and bring him to your side? I mean, that's something. You know, there's some interesting possibilities, but I mean, I guess if you're thinking about really spending money at receiver, then I think I would try to do it on Corey Davis, because you know what you have, you know he fits in well, and then you try to address, you know, your slot receiver or just outside depth, whatever. But you have to get more receivers. You have to draft at least one, regardless.
It was interesting to me. I was very fascinated to see what Titans fans thought of Corey Davis, given the way the season ended. He wasn't a factor in Green Bay, didn't play well in Houston, and then obviously not a factor against Baltimore in the first round of the playoffs either. And we've seen, you know, how up and down, you know, Corey Davis has been throughout his career here with the Titans, and quite frankly, how up and down his perception is here with the fans. And we threw out that poll question yesterday of the three Titans players you'd most like to see return next season. And the final results were Corey Davis at 37%, Jayon Brown at 33%, and Jonnu Smith at 30%. So Jonnu in last there, but it was fascinating to me to see that Corey Davis, despite the way the season ended, still was the top priority in terms of our poll question with Titans fans.
Well, it's interesting that Jonnu Smith comes in third there, but it's also, I mean, a pretty even split basically across three. That's kind of what they're looking at. I mean, you could make a strong case for all three of those guys. But, yeah, Corey obviously struggled late. He had some drops in Houston. You know, whatever happened, he got hurt in the playoff game. Hey, I mean, look at their offense without him. You know, that's kind of what you saw Sunday in their final game. You saw their offense without Corey Davis because there were two targets for him. He had no catches. He's not on the sideline late. He's probably the guy who makes the catch on the square end that turns into a pick instead because Khalif Raymond bumps into a DB and falls down. So you saw a little glimpse of how important he is if you want to look at it that way.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ron texts in and says, if Corey Davis is not a part of the team next year, do you think he could be a number one receiver somewhere else? Because obviously he's not that here with A.J. Brown.
No. I mean, I guess somewhere else, Corey Davis could be a number one receiver, but that's a team with a pretty bad receiving group. And I'm not trying to rip Corey Davis, but I think Corey Davis is a great two, is a terrific two. And I think that Corey Davis's game has benefited from being across from A.J. Brown and, you know, benefited from Derrick Henry turning into the best running back in the league. He's a really good player. But I don't think Corey Davis is someone that you build your passing game around. I think we've seen that in four seasons.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Corey in Bellevue texts in and says, with the way the last offseason went, it would be wise for the Titans to go with someone that they know and not bring somebody else in. So, Corey, not a whole lot of confidence in John Robinson and his abilities to sign free agents.
Well, what I would respond to that with is that they almost relied on their guys too much in some situations. And didn't go outside of the box enough. I mean, the fact that they relied on Cam Batson, Khalif Raymond, and the host of receivers that they had last year to be their depth guys, I think bit them in the rear end on Sunday.
Yeah, but I think Corey there is talking about, like, you know, you go out and get Clowney, it's a disaster. You go out and get Beasley, it's a disaster. You're bringing free agents in, and the production just hasn't been there with some of these guys. Do you trust John Robinson to go make these decisions again? Now, I mean, look, you can't operate in fear like that if you're a general manager and just be scared to death that every move you make is not going to work out, because if that's the case, you're not going to be around very long. But I do think, you know, free agency, if I'm looking around with some of the names that are going to be out there with this offense, that strengthens my case to bring Corey Davis back just based on the way he fits. I agree with Joe. I think he's a really good number two. And I know that for some people, that's not going to be good enough based on where he was drafted. I think you've got to get over that at this point. Yes, he's not worth the number five overall pick. That doesn't mean he can't be a good player in this league. And I think when I look around the free agent pool right now at wide receiver, to me, Corey Davis has got to be a priority because that room without him, it's not good. You can't rely on Adam Humphries. You're going to have to draft receivers either way, but I'm not too gung-ho on letting a young guy come in here and all of a sudden be your number two and you know, kind of rely on that for this offense with how good it's been with the current setup. I think Corey Davis, to me, he's got to be the top free agent priority they have.
Well, I think you could sign him, you could draft someone, and you could still, I mean, I think you still have to, I mean, you probably go a little deeper into the pool.
Right.
But you've got to find a good fit, you know, among the free agents. There are a lot of guys out there. I mean, you know, look, hey, wait, Taywan Taylor's available, by the way. but, you know, there are kind of second tier guys out there who, some of them older, but some of them not that old, who you're going to, I mean, Curtis Samuel is a fascinating player for me, although I think Carolina should be prioritizing keeping him. But you know, there's a lot of different kinds of skill sets. You got to figure out which is best for you. I do think that the skill set that Humphreys has, that type of player, that quick-footed slot receiver possession guy, I think that was missing too Sunday and at times down the stretch for the Titans, and it's something that they need to try to find.
So speaking of free agency, obviously last year at outside linebacker, that did not work out very well for the Titans. How should John Robinson and company go about addressing that position this offseason? We'll discuss that when we come back. And also make sure that you're tuning in this hour for the cue to call for your chance to qualify to win a pair of tickets to the Preds season opener versus the Columbus Blue Jackets at Bridgestone Arena tomorrow night. We'll have that for you throughout the day here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We'll be right back on Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porter with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Looking ahead to the Titans offseason and some of the decisions that they're going to have to make in free agency. Joe, let's go back to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We were talking about Corey Davis and how much of a priority he should be for the Titans in this offseason. Got a texter that says, I would say strengthening the offensive line is a higher priority than wide receiver so we can get our tight ends back into the passing game. I vote bringing Corey Davis back on a strong number two type of contract. So what do you make of that idea that the priority for the Titans offensively should be adding more depth to the offensive line to make sure that your weapons at tight end can be a part of the offense more frequently and not have to hang in there and block as much as they did after Taylor Lewan went down?
Well, look, I think you'd love to have depth everywhere, but that's not how this league is set up. I mean, I do think that re-signing Tyson Brailo would be a good move. I think trying to keep him would be good. I'm not sure about Questenberry. I think he actually may have a year left. I can look that up. Obviously you expect you're going to get Lewan back. And so, you've got everyone else across the board there at starter. We don't know what right tackle depth looks like, of course, because of, your first round pick, is he going to be a part of this team moving forward? So that's part of that. I mean, if he is, then I don't think you do much. I think you've got to roll with what you have. I just think that you've got to target where you really, really need help. And the bottom line is, if they are healthy up front, they've got a good offensive line. I mean, you can't account for injuries everywhere in this league. There's not enough room in the salary cap.
And Joe, one place we know this Titans team needs help is with the pass rush, and specifically at the outside linebacker position. That was just an absolute disaster for the Titans all season long. And we know what happened. Jadeveon Clowney brought in, Vic Beasley brought in, and it was just a total strikeout on both of them. Could not have gone worse for John Robinson at that position this offseason. And that's going to have to be something in one form or fashion, maybe in multiple forms and fashion, is going to have to be addressed by the Titans this offseason. And Pro Football Focus came out with a piece, just kind of targeting free agents that each team in the NFL should look for and pursue. And the guy that they came up with for the Titans this offseason is Leonard Floyd. And it says, quote, arguably the biggest issue on Tennessee's defense has been a complete inability to rush the passer. Harold Landry never developed into the edge rusher we thought he would be coming out of Boston College, and he remains the team's primary source of pressure. Leonard Floyd had a career-best 52 total pressures this season. He benefited from playing alongside Aaron Donald, but he also had 31 defensive stops and has been a consistently solid run defender over his career. Floyd won't solve the problem all by himself, but the Titans don't have a ton of cash to spend to achieve that. He will take steps to help in that direction. So you look at Leonard Floyd right now with the Rams, and obviously playing with Aaron Donald helps, but he does have 10.5 sacks this season. So what do you think of the idea of John Robinson and the Titans wading back into the free agency pool at outside linebacker and maybe going after a guy like Leonard Floyd?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's certainly going to be a real possibility. And Floyd's an interesting one. There are some other interesting names out there. you know, Bud Dupree is a guy who's gonna get a lot of attention. He's another one of those where, well, for one thing, he's coming off a serious injury. You know, he made almost $16 million this year. Also, how much does he benefit from playing opposite T.J. Watt? No, sure, quite a bit. But, you know, he's 28, and I think he's a good player. You've got Melvin Ingram, Shaq Barrett, Lavonte David is out there, Olivier Vernon. Of course, he's hurt too, you know, for the Browns. If you want to go older, you know, I don't know what the deal is with Von Miller. He may be restricted, but there's some guys. I mean, I think you look at every name we just said. I mean, you have to look closely and say, you know, does that person fit? And if so, how important is it to, you know, to sign someone who can come in here and start next to Harold Landry and be a force right away? And I think you still may, you know, end up drafting, you know, someone like that too. Again, I think you, with receiver, but especially I think with this position, with outside linebacker, with edge rushing, I mean, I think you may address both ways. I mentioned before, Zaven Collins, the Tulsa linebacker, is a guy that Brugler mocked to the Titans. Not a pure edge guy, but a guy who kind of fits the bill as a, who could be a really good 3-4 outside linebacker and do a lot of different things.
And it's interesting. Like, I'm looking at this list that Pro Football Focus has thrown out there, and they've kind of put it in alphabetical order. So it goes from the Titans to the Washington Football Team, and the free agent that they have for the Washington Football Team that they should absolutely pursue this offseason is Corey Davis, who we've been talking about. It says the Washington Football Team clearly have a major need at quarterback, but it's probably not one that's going to be solved in free agency. Whoever their quarterback is, that player will need players to throw the ball to. The team has relied on Terry McLaurin and little else for too long now. Corey Davis hits free agency coming off a career year and having shown that he is at his best when he can be a complimentary piece to an elite receiver like McLaurin. Davis finished fifth in the NFL in yards per route run and generated 123.6 passer rating for Ryan Tannehill when targeted in 2020, despite finishing the year with three ugly games. So there's going to be some pretty heavy interest in Corey Davis out there. What that price tag looks like, I have no idea. But Corey Davis is going to garner a lot of attention around the league.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's exactly, I mean, that analysis is dead on. It's, you know, if you're a team that is in need of a one, then I don't think that's where you're looking. But if you need a really strong complementary piece, and you do in this league, you know, then he's going to be very attractive to teams. I mean, there's going to be a market for him. There's no doubt about it. There's going to be a market for all three of those big free agents.
I look at the draft, and we talked about it before where, you know, if you're the NFL team, you always hear the best player available. But to me, like, if you're the Titans this year going into the draft, I know you can't just handicap yourself like this and, you know, reach and take a guy with a second round grade with your first round pick if he's still the best player left at the position of need. But if you go through this draft and you don't have at least, like, to me, two guys taking it outside linebacker that help you come in and rush the passer in some form or fashion, I don't know what you're doing in this draft. Like, it's got to be, you know, you look at it in free agency, you look at it in the draft as well, because it was such a glaring issue with this team that you need to do everything you can possibly do if you're John Robinson to address it. And I realize he tried last year and it didn't work out, but you got to try again, because if you go into the situation next year and the defense next year and you don't have an answer at that position, it's just going to be really hard to compete for a Super Bowl. It's as simple as that.
Not only do you need new pass rushers, but you also just need to give Harold Landry some help.
Yeah.
I mean, Harold Landry is not as effective when he's playing every single down. So building depth at that position is vital this offseason.
I agree, and I also would say that, you know, Daquan Jones, certainly a guy who may not be back, and I mean, even if he is, but especially if he's not, I mean, you've got to find someone up front to put next to Jeffrey Simmons,
yeah,
who can be a difference maker. I mean, this was the year I was really looking forward to seeing what it might look like with Casey Simmons together. Obviously, we didn't see it. That's important too. It really is. I mean, there are a lot of guys. You could also, I mean, look, if there's someone you love here, you could potentially like trade up. I mean, a guy like Gregory Rousseau of Miami, who's a heck of a college pass rusher, you know, right now he's projected about the middle of the first round. I mean, if you love a guy like that, maybe you move up to get him if he's the exact guy you want. But there are a lot of edges. Azeez Ojulari from Georgia is another guy who could be there around where the Titans pick, and I think he's a real promising young pass rusher.
When we come back, we'll switch gears and get into the Nashville Predators. Their season beginning tomorrow against the Columbus Blue Jackets at home. And you look around the league, not a ton of expectations for this Predators team. Could that be a good thing for them heading into this season? We'll discuss that when we come back. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porter with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We'll be joined by Teresa Walker from the Associated Press to begin the 8 o'clock hour. Matt Duchesne, Predator Center, will join us at 9 o'clock. And then Adam Vingan from The Athletic joins us at 9:30. So still a lot to get to today here on the show. And Joe, we talked about it a little bit yesterday. The expectations outwardly for this Nashville Predators group heading into this season, they're just not going to be the same as they have been the past few years. And I went through the predictions on NHL.com. Many people not even picking the Predators to make the playoffs in this new division where you've got the top four seeds and all the divisions making the playoffs and then having your pool after that. And nobody picked the Predators higher than third on NHL.com. And that's not been the norm over the course of the past, you know, 3 to 4 years since they made their run to the Stanley Cup final. Hal Gill joined Stillman and Company yesterday and talked about that approach and that viewpoint of this Predators team and how maybe that's a good thing coming in with a chip on your shoulder this year to this season. Here's what Hal Gill had to say.
What's going on in the locker room right now is they're being told that they're not that great, and they have been told that they're awesome for the last 2 years. You're a great team. You're going to make the playoffs. You're going to make a run at the Cup. And, you know, they kind of took it for granted maybe. So this year, you got people like you that are saying they're no good, and maybe that's lights a fire under them, and they get a little more burn, a little more excitement for each game, a little more, hey, let's go prove ourselves, a little chip on your shoulder, and then you go and play. And so for young guys, I do think they have to play. It's a young man's game, and all these kids need to come out and show what they can do. But at the same time, there's a lot of pride. There's a lot of guys that want to come out and prove what they can do.
So that was Hal Gill on with Stillman and Company. And Joe, what do you think of those comments thrown out there by Hal that the underdog role that this team has, the expectations not being as high for this group outwardly this year, maybe that ends up being a good thing for them internally in that locker room?
Yeah, I think if you're a coach or a player, then you like that. You prefer that. Now, I think if you're, you know, running this team or selling this team, you want the team to be picked to win the whole thing. You know, you want more excitement around the team. You want on paper to have, a team that looks like a dominant team. But I think this could serve to help them. You know, when you have these expectations and they rise the way they do, then when you have all the bad things get magnified, you know, and I do think that just especially last year, but then you go back the year before with the power play, the angst builds. And I do think sometimes it can kind of, you know, feed itself a little bit. And I think we saw it with the power play. I mean, it was like, just, it was this thing where mentally, I think it got, you know, they're trying all these, you know, here, you take over the power play now for a month and see if you can fix it. You know, Laviolette's switching it up. And I mean, it gets to be a mental thing. And I think last year, it's just like whenever they'd have a bad stretch or a bad game, no, this team is supposed to be great. You know, this is the most talented team on paper, blah, blah, blah. That won't be the case now. Now you can actually pleasantly surprise people. And like Hal said, maybe some of these guys take exception with that too. The fact that they're sort of being overlooked, or not considered among the top teams in the league.
Yeah, I do think the Predators in the past have enjoyed that label and have enjoyed kind of flying in under the radar. Like even 2017, like when you make the run to the Cup final, you're the 8th seed essentially in the Western Conference. You knock off Chicago in the first round, and that got everybody's attention. But I don't think anybody nationally really believed that that team was going to be dangerous and make a run in the playoffs. And they really haven't had that label on them ever since then. I mean, You think back to the President's Trophy. They were the favorite that year to win the Stanley Cup once the playoffs began. You think back to the next year, even though if you watched them play, I mean, it was a lot more up and down than we had grown accustomed to seeing. But they still won the division. You're back in the playoffs. You're going up against Dallas. They were the heavy favorite to win that series against Dallas. Obviously, they did not. So this group for the last few years have had these expectations. I mean, even last year before the season began, you got Subban out the door, Duchesne coming in. You think you've got this two-line attack in your top six that you've really never had before, and that we know it didn't play out that way. But I look at this group, and I do think there is a perception that they're just really far away. They're not going to be able to come back and compete this year. And I don't think that's necessarily the case either. I mean, I think they still have a chance to be a good team. And you look at the lines yesterday at practice. I mean, Forsberg, Johansson, and Arvidsson are together. It looks like that's going to be the way they start the season, although Arvidsson did leave practice early yesterday. So we'll see what happens with him today and whether or not he's back on the ice. But to me, Granlund not being in yet and not being able to get through customs and immigration and get on the ice, I'm interested to see how long that's going to be and how long that process takes, because right now the second line is Eric Halla, Matt Duchesne, who we'll have on the show later, and then Luke Cunningham as well. There's a lot of pressure on that second line with this team. So the underdog role is great, and that's going to be good. You still also have to have, you know, your horses in production that can put the puck in the back of the net. And right now, I still think that's a big question mark on the second line, given what it looks like in its current state.
Right. And, you know, I guess you could also look at it like, well, you know, Granlund's going to be there. So for now, you're a little bit, hey, let's just see what you can do. You know, this is an opportunity for other guys to show something. But ultimately, when everything is all put together and everybody's active, I mean, that line is going to be a huge focal point, because I think most people, especially after watching them in the playoffs, and I mean, look, if you watch those guys together for years now, you know, you expect that top line to be really good. But is this team going to be able to surprise and do enough, even if it's harder to play against, even with, you know, shoring up some other things, and you've got a lot of options in your bottom six, and you got a better third pairing? I mean, is there enough scoring to be the team you want to be? I mean, a lot of the answer to that is going to be Duchesne's line.
It is, and to me, like the underdog role, like the mentality of coming into a season like that, it all really boils down to me is what's the mentality of your top guys? Like, I think we know what we're going to get out of Roman Josi every night. It's going to be pretty good. He's going to be pretty consistent. I think if Ryan Ellis stays healthy, I mean, that's the same with him too. We've heard about how great, you know, Forsberg, Johansson, and Arvidsson have looked in the scrimmages, and, you know, how good they've looked together in practice, and that's great. I mean, that's a good sign if you're the Predators, but can they sustain that? Like, can that be something that they bring to the table every night? Because to me, for this team to compete for the division and to get up to a spot where you're comfortable in making the playoffs, that's what it's going to take. I mean, you're going to have that sort of approach every night from Forsberg and Johansson and Arvidsson and Matt Duchesne, quite frankly, from guys that we didn't see that enough from last year. And to me, again, it's great to see that in scrimmages. It's great to see that in practice, but can that be sustained? I think that's probably John Hines' number one task this year heading in. He's done a lot of work. He's talked a lot about mentality. That's the first thing he started talking about last year when he was first hired. Can you sustain that this year when you run into some problems, when things inevitably go wrong at some point, like they do every regular season, whether it's through play this year, whether it's through COVID, and you've got adversity that hits you there? Can you sustain that mentality and that edge? If you can, I think you give yourself a shot with this roster. If you can't, I think you're going to be in trouble based on the limited amount of scoring experience that I think they have.
Well, I think that's one of the confusing things about this group for me is a lot of these same guys who are here now and who were here last year, to me, for a good stretch there, multi-season stretch, they were a group that, like, you never thought were out of a game. How many times do we see them fight back in games and pull things, especially at home? They had some incredible, but, you know, just a team that, you know, like, they weren't out of a game necessarily, you know, down two goals in the second period. And last year, it just felt like a lot of times they just sort of faded when things went wrong. not to mention that they would also, you know, blow some games, but it didn't seem like they had the same sort of, same sort of mental fortitude. So why is that? Because I think playing, being harder to play against, and I know that there's a correlation there too. You know, if you're a gritty, grimy team, and you win a lot of those battles in the corners and things like that, you should be able to, have better results and, whatever the game situation is, you should be able to fight and have a better situation. But still, that's still two different things: being harder to play against and having the mental strength to handle, adversity in a game. It just seemed like last year's team in particular did not handle those things well. Why is that? Same guys. I know they made a coaching change, but is that the answer? I mean, I think that's a big thing to watch this year is how they respond in situations like that. I actually did think that, I thought that they really showed progress there in that limited postseason, even though the results weren't there. I mean, the fight back and all that was there.
And to me, this is where the true evaluation of John Hines to me begins, because you come in midway through the season last year, you're trying to change things on the fly, you're a month and a half deep into your job, and all of a sudden COVID hits and, all hell breaks loose. You're not able to play, you come back for the return to play, and you're done again, and it's an off season. To me, this is where the evaluation and the John Hines tenure really begins. You've got your fingerprint on this team now. You've made changes that you felt like were necessary over the offseason, albeit you still haven't had a very long training camp to really establish what you want to do. You've got to do that on the fly this year, given how quickly training camp turns around and the season begins. But to me, this is where the evaluation of John Hines begins, is with this group, with this team, with the changes that they've made. And I'm interested what kind of a difference that makes, what kind of a difference John Hines can make throughout the course of a full season. It didn't go well, obviously, in New Jersey. He made the playoffs that one year in the MVP season with Taylor Hall. But by all accounts, you ask around the league, everybody's in love with the guy. I mean, he's a guy that is regarded as one of the up-and-coming coaches in the National Hockey League. I want to see it this year. I want to see some adjustments made on the fly. I want to see his effect from the mentality of this team, the personality, the style of play. To me, that begins this year with John Hines. For the first time, really, I think, as I define the evaluation period.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I think that it's certainly more good than bad that you saw last year in the limited time. I also think that there's naturally some kind of a bump usually from a coaching change. I mean, even if it's just that guys – maybe feel a little kick in the butt when their coach gets fired. When David Poile fired Pierre Laviolette, he basically said, if I could fire a bunch of players, I would, but I had to fire the coach. That's basically what he said. So, there's automatically going to be some kind of a bump and a change, and there was, but I agree. Now it's your team. You've had the full time. You know everyone. You've evaluated them. You've talked to them. You've had a chance to put it together, and it's still not ideal, totally normal time situation, but you had an off season. You have this strange season that we're about to have ahead. So what can you really do with this? I agree. This will be the real test of him.
So all off season long, we've penciled in Elli Tolvanen into the lineup in terms of being a guy that could come in and maybe contribute in the top six. And David Poile had some interesting comments yesterday on Darren Dohnyk and Chase and why that may not be the case to begin this season. How much of a concern is that for Elli Tolvanen and his long-term future? We'll discuss that when we come back. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, taking you through this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Teresa Walker from the Associated Press will join us to begin the 8 o'clock hour, so looking forward to that conversation with her. We'll get into all things Tennessee Titans. Look around the world of sports here locally with her. Teresa Walker, well-versed in many different teams. So we'll have that conversation for you with her to begin the 8 o'clock hour. And Joe, we've been talking about the Predators, and Elli Tolvanen was a huge conversation piece all offseason long in terms of being a guy that could come in, maybe helps on the power play, maybe contributes on the second line, plays in the top six right from the jump. And I just kind of had him penciled in all offseason long based on the options available, based on what I projected this lineup to look like. And then all of a sudden, towards the end of the offseason, right before we get into training camp and the season's right around the corner, Mikhail Granlund comes back into the fold. The Predators make the decision to go out and bring in Eric Halla. And you're looking around and saying, all right, you know, if everybody's healthy, I'm not quite sure where Elli Tolvanen is going to fit into this. And all of a sudden, here we are in training camp, and it's not looking great for Elli Tolvanen to be on the opening night roster. And David Poile, Nashville Predators general manager, had some interesting comments about Elli Tolvanen and his role right now yesterday with Darren Donick and Chase. Here's what Nashville Predators general manager David Poile had to say.
We haven't had the opportunities to put guys in as much as we want. I mean, John Hines, our coach, is really gone with the top line of Forsberg, Johansson, and Arvidsson, which has been terrific and looks great. And then we've had to wait on our second line with Duchesne just getting back in and Halla just getting back in, Granlund not being here. So Tolvanen, for example, never got to play. What I would say on a first or second line situation. So I guess that's a good way of maybe saying that he's got to keep working hard and he's got to wait for his opportunity because it may not be on Thursday night.
So David Poile saying there that Tolvanen's opportunity may not be coming up tomorrow as the Predators get rolling this season. Joe, as you look at Tolvanen and obviously the hype around him, what he's been in terms of his production, both internationally and now in the American Hockey League as well. If you're the Predators, how concerned are you or would you be at this point that Tolvanen has not really forced his way into the conversation as being a guy you can rely on in the top six?
Well, I think to some extent you have to be. Now, to go back to our conversation with C-Mace, Chris Mason yesterday, no, I asked him, like, Tolvanen's 21, and we're acting like, you know, it's like near the end of the road here. Are we overreacting? And I agree with him that, you know, guys develop at different rates, and sometimes a player in this league or a professional hockey player at 20, 21 is a very different player at 23, 24. But given the needs of this team, and all the – look, the hype, I think, was obviously overblown. And, you know, I'll every time this comes up, I'll raise my hand and say I was part of it. But still, I mean, this is someone that you're hoping to rely on. And so I think it is discouraging. It's disappointing if he ends up not having a role given all the clearing out for him to have a role.
Yeah, and that's to me the thing. Like, he's never going to be able to escape the expectations, and that's fine. I mean, that's part of being a first-round pick. That's part of all the hype that happened, not only just from us here in the media. I mean, the Predators, they hyped him up when he came over too. I mean, I remember back in that 18 season when they're making their run to the President's Trophy, I mean, David Poile was talking about it at the trade deadline, like, you know, yeah, I'm open to doing things. I also want to leave the door open for Elli Tolvanen to come over. And he really didn't make any bones about it. That was part of the plan, and it just never worked out. So I think it's obvious that he has developed at a slower pace than everybody thought. I'm not willing to just completely throw in the towel on him yet, but it is concerning to me that you're talking about a guy who I think the talent level in terms of his shot offensively is pretty obvious. I mean, he's got a great shot. Obviously, he's proven that he's got the ability to score. But I do think the fact that he has not forced himself into the conversation yet as a guy that you're comfortable playing away from the puck, that can handle a top six role, I do think that's concerning. And honestly, you know, you've heard about the changes he's made to his body, and, you know, he's leaner now, quicker, the ability to get to move around a little better on the ice. Milwaukee had a great year last year. It took Tolvanen a while to get going last year. He ends up with 21 goals, which is a respectable amount in 63 games, but it took him a while to get going last year. They sent him over to the KHL earlier this year, back to Jokerit, where he had a ton of success in 2017-18, and he finishes with 5 goals in 25 games. I mean, this statistically, you're still kind of waiting on that breakout, and it just kind of feels like we haven't been close to seeing it yet with Tolvanen.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because obviously previously with Jokerit, he was like dynamite, you know. I mean, it's a small sample size, but I mean, to me, it's been, you mentioned trying to change the body, trying to be more physical, trying to be more explosive, like you said, quicker. I mean, that the thing with obviously sometimes that you lose in the translation with players playing internationally, you know, the ice, the big ice can trick you a little bit. And it is much harder in this league and these rinks to create space for yourself. He obviously, you know, hasn't figured that out. Is it there? Like, is it physically, does he just not have the proper physical makeup to do that? I don't know. I do know that if you could just plunk him in on your power play, yeah, I think he'd be an asset for you, but it's not that simple. You know, I mean, he's got to be able to earn that role to be there. So I don't know. Like, is that, and that's the thing when we're talking about him being 21, all that stuff, like how much more can he grow?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know the answer to that question, but it seems like he's just struggling with some of the physical aspects of the game that, that you've got to be at a certain level to be trusted to be a top six forward.
Well, and I also wonder, like, at what point, if you're the Predators, do you have to just throw him in and see what he's got at the NHL level? Like, I get it. It hasn't been great so far. And even in Milwaukee, while he's been productive, I mean, he's not just tearing up the AHL and, like, forcing his way into a call-up. So I get it. I mean, the reservations have got to be there. And I do think he's improved. I think that he's gotten better. I think he's closer. I still don't know that he's ready for the NHL, but if you're the Predators, how long do you wait around? And at what point do you just say, look, we've got to see what this kid can do at the NHL level and put him into the situation regardless of whether or not he's ready for it and see how he handles it?
Yeah. I mean, it's the whole, some people are gamers, you know, but that's the difference too. It's not like we're just talking practice to game. You know, we're talking a guy at the AHL, I mean, usually that's a pretty good indicator of your readiness for this level, is if you can go be at that level and be a top player. And I wouldn't say that's what he was last year. So, but maybe you're right. Maybe it's just, hey, you give him an extended look and see what he can do. I mean, if there was ever a time for that, it'd probably be right now with Granlund still waiting to come back, you know, and yep. I mean, this would be an opportunity. If they don't do that, then that tells you that, you know, they don't view him as, I guess, close or certainly not close enough.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Nate texts in and says, if Tolvanen breaks into the lineup at any point this season, what would we like to see from him? He's known for his scoring, but he usually has to be set up. It seems like he can't create on his own. So should we just see him on the power play, or what do you think his role should be if he's able to crack the lineup? And that is an interesting point, I think, brought up by Nate there, is that's what I'm looking for out of Ellie Tolvanen. Is, look, I know the shot's good. I've seen it. That was obvious from the first time he set foot on the ice. He's got an NHL quality shot, and a shot that if you give him enough time, he'll score goals in this league. It's that good. But can you get open? Like, can you create shots on your own? The room in the NHL, it's very rare that you've just got all day to tee one up and shoot and pick the corner. I mean, you've got to find a way to get your shots off quickly. If no shots there, you got to find a way to create room on your own. And that's where I still feel like Ellie Tolvanen has a ton of room to grow. I mean, he's got to be able to find ways to get his shot off more efficiently and to be able to create more room. I mean, it's not a secret. Like, if you're pre-scouting Ellie Tolvanen, if you're another team, right now the book on him is get as close as you can to that guy, close up the time and space, and make it impossible for him to get his shot off, because if you do that, there's not really any areas on the other part of the ice where he's going to hurt you. Like, defensively, he's gotten better, but he's still not like this, you know, heavy two-way forward that's just going to take the puck away from you on the other side of the ice. So he's got to get better in that area of finding ways to create room and then utilize what is his biggest strength, and that is his shot. And I just haven't seen enough of that so far in his career.
I mean, you think about like a Forsberg, obviously it took him some time too, right? But physically, I'm assuming even going back to his younger days, he was a force, right? I mean,
he was.
He must have been, right? Yeah. I mean, so, and that's the question, I guess, is like, are there just limitations on Tolvanen that he can't overcome?
Yeah. I mean, it's a fair question. And look, I mean, you're going to see if this season comes and goes, and he's not really a part of things and isn't productive, you will see a sizable portion of the Preds fan base say, look, it's time to move on from this guy. I don't subscribe to that theory, but also will say, like, I do think there was a time where, like, Elli Tolvanen maybe was borderline untouchable in a trade package, and I don't know if that should be the case anymore either. So I think the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. You don't just punt on a 21-year-old first-round pick if he doesn't work out as quickly as you'd like him to work out, but I do think the clock is starting to tick on Elli Tolvanen in terms of being that dynamic player that we all thought he could be.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be an interesting year to see if he gets any kind of an opportunity. And then, you know, how much pressure is he feeling right now? Because the thing is, again, 21, and if you're him, you could reasonably say, hey, I got a long way to go here.
Yeah.
But you've also been the subject of all this hype, and you know that people are talking about you and the fans and all that. So you got to be able to put that out of your mind too. I mean, that's a tough distraction for a young player.
When we come back, we'll dive back into the Tennessee Titans. Teresa Walker from the Associated Press will join us. That's next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game.